You're listening to another Talk.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is now September the 4th, 2015. The time keeps right on marching along, and I thank you for joining me. It's always great to play that game of catch-up that we have not done for the past 2 weeks. Travels and all sorts of stuff going on, but I am very happy to join you tonight. I hope you've all been having a terrific week. Hope you have a great weekend coming up. Certainly this is a a significant weekend, Labor Day weekend. Everyone hopefully will be home with the families, barbecues, and getting in the last bit of that summer fling that will soon be replaced by autumn and then winter. So not too many more days of air conditioning ahead of us, hopefully. But again, it's great to be with you. Those of you familiar with me know that I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service, a mission that is supposedly taken over by ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. But as we all know, not much to see here, folks. Keep moving. You know, we're in a mess. And finally, the end of this administration is not here yet, but it's on the horizon. The obvious question, of course, is what will the next administration do, perhaps if not for us, to us, which seems to be the case with the current administration. Just to mention some websites, michaelcutler.net is my own personal website. Capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org, is the website that I have been writing for many years, Californians for Population Stabilization. I have a couple of my articles up on their terrific website right now. We're going to talk about them in a bit, one being the immigration tipping point and the other one, the controversy over birthright citizenship. I also write for Front Page Magazine, my most recent article for that terrific organization, is keeping track of visa violators, the overlooked source of the nation's illegal immigration problems that people are finally talking about. Certainly Governor Christie has been talking about it, all happening, of course, because of Donald Trump bringing up the issue and causing all the establishment types to quake in their boots, and I am enjoying that spectacle, I don't mind telling you, and I suspect you are also. Very enjoyable watching our supposed representatives squirming. During the 60s, the war cry in the black neighborhoods was burn, baby, burn. Today in Washington, it's squirm, baby, squirm. These are the issues that for a very long time, all too many politicians from both parties have tried to keep off the headlines, out of the news, refused to talk about it other than perhaps issue a couple of terse slogans, you know, let's secure the border first and let's not talk about anything else. Well, that worm has turned and they are squirming. Also, I write for Progressives for Immigration Reform, Front Page, the Social Contract also has an article that will be of particular significance next week as we recognize, hard to believe, the 14th anniversary of the terror attacks of September 11th, 2001. I did a retrospective, lengthy analysis where we are today, almost 14 years after the attacks. The 9/11 Commission laid out a blueprint, much the same way that when space shuttles Challenger and Columbia were lost during tragic accidents, NASA convened panels to find out what went wrong to make certain that history would not repeat itself. When airplanes crash, when trains crash, immediately there were investigations done. What went wrong? Was it pilot error? Was it an issue with the airplane's design? Was it about maintenance? Did somebody in the control tower do something wrong? Let's get to the cause of it so we don't have this happen again. Yet incredibly, on 9/11, 3,000 innocent people going about their daily lives were obliterated by foreign nationals who had all gamed the visa process, entered the United States intent on wreaking havoc upon us, and they succeeded. And not only changing America, but changing the world, 19 people. Today we have unknown millions, and this nonsense number of 11 million is as meaningless as the 5.1% unemployment rate they were touting today. Isn't it remarkable? 5.1% unemployment. We should all be celebrating. In fact, 93 million Americans found a unique way to celebrate. They're not working. How in the world do we talk about a 5.1% unemployment rate while our government blithely ignores 93 million, nearly a third of our entire population, of working age not working? 5.1%. 11 million illegal aliens. Both statistics are about as meaningful. It's a big, fat, juicy lie. We used to expect better of our government. Yes, we knew that they would play games, and Lyndon Johnson was accused of having a credibility gap about Vietnam and some other issues. But folks, these lies, my gosh, I don't even think that during the days of the Soviet Union that those news organizations of Pravda and Izvestia would have the chutzpah to lie this way. But this is what has become business as usual for this administration. You know, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. Apparently, too many people apparently were enjoying the BS, so they kept the BS for another 4 years. But finally, the end is in sight. I just worry what this guy will do every day that he still sits in the Oval Office. And I'm a registered Democrat. This isn't about left or right. It's right or wrong, and I'm tired of both parties. My son brought home a pin from his college campus. I wish this was TV so I could show it to you. It shows the two mascots, you know, the elephant and the jackass, the two mascots of the Republican and Democrat parties, or the, as I call them, Democrats and repugnant can parties. And it says, do not feed the animals. Do not feed the animals indeed. Those parties continue on a daily basis to prove that they are the opponents of American workers, of America's middle class, of college kids running up all together in the conglomerate $1.2 trillion deficit in student loans, and all too often can't get jobs within their chosen fields for which they've spent so much time, effort, money, talent, because we are hell-bent on bringing in as many foreign workers as possible to remove any distinction between America and the third world. We are headed towards the third world, and that's why Donald Trump's message, in my judgment, reverberates in the heart and soul of so many Americans. And the talking fools on TV, and I don't care what network you want to spin the dial to. In the old days, we used to turn a dial. I know we don't do that anymore. But boy, if you want to talk about Russian roulette, spin the dial, and I don't care what network you're watching. When you listen to those pundits, especially on Sunday morning, pontificating with all the gravitas of you know, some oracle of brilliance, no one can understand. Even the Chinese economy is faltering. You want to know why I think the Chinese economy is faltering? And you don't need a PhD for this, folks. This is not nearly as complex as those fools in front of the TV cameras want to make it to be. America, because of the nature of our citizens, is the biggest consumer nation in the world. When Apple announces a new iPhone, the people line up and they will stand in that line for 3 days. It can rain, it can snow, you can have tornadoes. It doesn't matter. People will literally camp out on a line because they have issued a new iPhone that's 2/16 of an inch wider and 1/300 of an inch thinner, and it now comes in polka dots. It doesn't matter. It's new. It comes in a nice fancy box. and you have to shell out lots of money, but it has that new thing smell to it, like the new car smell. That's what Americans do. It's remarkable. I mean, yes, we have consumers in other countries, but I don't think that any country has produced the kind of consumerism that we see in America today. Well, we used to. We don't see it today because the middle class is under attack by its own government, by this administration. Wage equality. Think of how many people scream, yes, I want wage equality. Wage equality, boys and girls, is not a good thing, especially when you look at how the Democratic Party talks about achieving wage equality. It is absolutely astonishing. And most people foolishly, blindly, thoughtlessly follow this notion of wage equality because it sounds good. Now, look, I'm a Democrat. I agree with a $15 an hour minimum wage, and I know the conservatives out there are groaning as I say it, but here's my perspective. Nobody lives on $8 an hour anyway because it's just, you know, it's not a living wage. So any person, any family trying to subsist on that kind of money is getting all kinds of subsidies, food stamps, housing subsidies, you name it. I would rather that people that work come to appreciate that by working they're able to actually support themselves, not just add a couple of bucks to the envelope that comes through the mail slot whether or not they're working. That's how we will end this whole idea about a reliant population. And, of course, the politicians don't want that because they want everybody beholden to them. You know, I think some politicians would love it if you had to go to them for a napkin or an aspirin or whatever. Can you please give me my cup of coffee? You know, because then they control. And most people who run for office are control freaks. There's just no other way of describing it. So, you know, what we're witnessing is a government that really wants to be able to control the population. A $15 an hour wage is reasonable when you consider what the cost of living is. But let's move away from that argument because that's not where I want to go with this. What I do want to go with it is this. Even at $15 an hour, we're talking about an annual income of $30,000 a year. That is not a minimum, that's not a middle class wage. And it's remarkable because the poverty line is somewhere around $23,000 or $24,000 a year for a family of four. Folks, in New York City, you can't care for a dog on $24,000 a year, let alone a family of four. But Alan Greenspan was so clear about his idea about wage equality. I've read this in the past. I think it's worthwhile just reconsidering it today. Alan Greenspan testified for Chuck Schumer. Of course, Greenspan was the chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank a number of years ago. Chuck Schumer, who at the time chaired the Senate Immigration Subcommittee, held a hearing April 30th, 2009. The topic of the hearing was comprehensive immigration reform. Can we do it and how? That was the topic in 2009. At the time, I wrote an article and I noted the apocryphal law firm, Do We Cheat Them and How, rather than Can We Do It and How. Of course, I was saying it as a humorous thing. There's no humor here. There's no humor. Because this, you know, Greenspan called at the behest of Chuck Schumer, not only talked about how great it was that we had undocumented workers, even though it suppressed wages, but only by a little bit, according to Mr. Greenspan. By a little bit. The guy that has this luxurious house in the Hamptons is worth God knows how many, probably hundreds of millions of dollars, which is fine. But to then look down your nose and say, well, even if we flood the market with cheaper labor, wage suppression, minimal. What he doesn't recognize or care about is that when you're earning bottom rung paychecks, every dollar counts. There are people that go to bed hungry at night because they ran out of money before they could get to the end of the month. Every dollar counts. And he just, you know, very cavalier about it, said, oh, it'd be a minimum suppression of wage. Really? And meanwhile, what about the Americans who lose their jobs that way? But let's talk about the middle-class workers. Let's talk about the STEM workers, science, technology, engineering, math, the computer programmers, the scientists, the biologists, the people doing cancer research. Greenspan talked about the highly skilled workers, because under the immigration law, that's how we define such workers, highly skilled. Here's what Greenspan said. This was why he, by the way, was insisting on greatly expanding the number of H-1B high-tech visas. And he quoted Gates, who, of course, said he wanted an unlimited number, even though, according to Donald Trump, half of all American kids who get degrees in the STEM professions, science, technology, engineering, and math, aren't getting jobs in those fields because they're not able to. Think about that. But let's open the door for more of them. And Ted Cruz wants a massive increase in the number of H-1B visas. Mr. Rubio, same deal, wants more. Rand Paul said that he voted against comprehensive reform because he doesn't want any limit whatsoever. No limits. Let's import the workers from around the world and the hell with the American worker. That's Rand Paul's screwy idea about what would be good for America or Americans. I'd love to know who's giving these people their campaign contributions, wouldn't you? And that's the issue. And that's the issue. And I'm not telling you that I'm endorsing Donald Trump yet, but certainly the point that he makes is a well-taken point, that he is not beholden to anybody writing a check. So he's able to stand there and say, let's stop this national act of suicide. And he's right. And he's right. But this is what Greenspan had to say, why we need to open the doors to many more high-tech workers. And he says the following. First, skilled workers and their families form new households. They will, of necessity, move into vacant housing units. Isn't that a great way to describe an American home lost to foreclosure? A vacant housing unit. It sounds like a hotel room or a prison cell. And then he goes on and says, the current glut of which is depressing prices of American homes. And, of course, house price declines are a major factor in mortgage foreclosures and the plunge in value of the vast quantity of U.S. mortgage-backed securities that has contributed substantially to the disabling of our banking system. Do you know what contributed to the disabling of our banking system, folks? It was Greenspan subprime mortgages, many of which went to illegal aliens whose true identities could not be verified. So how in the world do you do a credit check on somebody who's probably using a false name and we can't even find that out? Greenspan, the oracle of brilliance, the pinnacle of morality and decency, and Chuck Schumer's buddy. And he called him to testify to give us some wisdom about how to really screw over the American workers at that hearing. Because that's what this is all about. But it's the second bonus that he talks about that takes my breath away. The second bonus, again, to greatly increase the number of H-1B visas, folks, would address the increasing concentration of income in this country. Someone's making too much money. I wonder who it is, and I doubt he's talking about Gates, Zuckerberg, or himself. He goes on and says, greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled would lower wage premiums of the skilled over the lesser skilled. Skill shortages in America exist because we are shielding our skilled labor force from world competition. Quotas have been substituted for the wage pricing mechanism. In the process, we have created a privileged elite. How's that for a term to describe the middle class? Privileged elite whose incomes are being supported at non-competitively high levels by immigration quotas on skilled professionals. Eliminating such restrictions would reduce at least some of our income inequality. Alan Greenspan, friend of the American middle class family, you think? So finally, we get to this issue about immigration. Because this is what is happening. By destroying the incomes of American families, Americans don't have disposable incomes. And you know what? Most of the dreck that we buy, most of the garbage that we buy is sold and is manufactured in China and sold in the United States. If Americans are no longer earning money, and there are other countries in distress also, look what's going on in Greece. The money is going away. Nobody can buy all those trinkets and nonsense. So China is feeling the impact. This business about the willful, engineered destruction of the middle class, and I've written innumerable articles about it for CapsWeb.org, Front Page Magazine, Progressives for Immigration Reform, the social contract. I've been trying to wake people up to the way we're being shafted. This is what's happening. The super wealthy can't get their hands on enough money. And who could blame them? I mean, when you're worth $50 billion, certainly you need more money, don't you? So the outrage is they're bringing down this house of cards in their quest for more money. I compare the Zuckerbergs and the Bloombergs and the Gateses and all these other thugs with a malignant cancer. See, cancer has an insatiable appetite for nutrients. Cancer very often secretes hormones that forces the body that it infests with blood vessels. So it can bathe itself in nutrients. And the cancer grows rapidly because, in a manner of speaking, it becomes an organ in the body, the most successful organ. It just grows and grows and absorbs more nutrients and keeps getting bigger and fatter and bigger. And it's very successful, right up until the day that its victim dies. And then that super-duper successful cancerous tumor is buried along with its victim. Our country is being slaughtered because there are people that have a desperate urge, they're binging on the money that should be circulating in the economy, and everything should be humming along fine. It was doing okay. Started with the H-1B visas, and we started bringing in ever more foreign students. And that's why wages have not gone up. This is why middle-class families have fallen into poverty, because people, through no fault of their own, have been fired and displaced by people from countries such as India. Walt Disney Company, and I will never, ever give Disney a penny, not to buy any songs that they sell. I will not rent their movies. I will never go to Disney World. They fired roughly 500 American computer programmers. And it wasn't because these people were incompetent. Because you know what? Disney told them, if you want your severance package, you will train the people we are importing to replace you. You don't want to train them, you're out the door, and we're not going to give you your severance package. So they extorted the services for the last time from the people they screwed over because they were American workers. And God only knows, Americans might actually expect a living wage for their exceptionalism. If I sound angry, I am. I am. Because this is also undermining America's national security. And as a New Yorker, as an American, I cannot forget the fact that next week at this time will be the 14th anniversary of that horrific day. That horrific day that was preventable if the Clinton administration had heeded the warnings that were as plain as day about how terrorists launched terrorist attacks inside the United States in September of 1993. I did my very first congressional hearing on that very issue on May 20th, 1997. 4.5 years before 9/11. You see, this level of greed that we are witnessing is not unlike that malignant tumor that has no concept about long-term consequences. It's like the little baby screaming, feed me, except babies are babies and we care for them and we teach them how to go about things properly. But you have very wealthy, very controlling people now who are in a feeding frenzy. And no matter how much they have, they're going to want more. You know, most people are happy if every few years they can buy or maybe lease, as is now the case, a new car. Or maybe go out and buy a new suit. These folks fly around the world in corporate airplanes or private airplanes that make Air Force One look like a cattle car by comparison. They have homes sprinkled around the world. They have boats that put ocean liners to shame, and they need more. And in this rampage to acquire more, destroying the economy. And with the economy, they're destroying America's capacity to defend itself. Read The Art of War by Sun Tzu. A bankrupt country can't mount a defense. We're being left defenseless to satisfy these primal urges of some very greedy individuals who don't care about the damage they do, the lives they ruin, the futures they destroy, all so that they can have more wealth, more power, more influence. They are grammatically challenged. They can only conjugate verbs in the first person singular. And then you have the politicians who come out there and they try to make it seem that they're listening to what the Americans want, but they make sure that they don't change the equation. I'm not sure where Chris Christie falls in all this, but there are questions that we should be asking. I don't know if you saw it, but Chris Christie this past week or last weekend compared the issue about tracking aliens who overstay their visas with packages being shipped by FedEx. And he said, you know, FedEx does such a great job of tracking all those packages. We should hire FedEx to track people who enter the United States on temporary, what we call non-immigrant visas. I almost fell out of my chair, and I'll tell you why I almost fell out of my chair. First of all, this isn't just about tracking. Tracking doesn't mean anything. Packages aren't playing the game of hide and seek. Packages don't use fake names or get sent to bogus addresses that don't exist. The people that send the package obviously want the package to go where it's going. The package has no mind of its own, so it can't interfere with the process. And the people who are receiving the package, who spent money on it, do what they can to make certain that they give the right address and they're there waiting for the truck when it shows up. When aliens enter the United States with the intent of working illegally, or as we saw on 9/11, with the intention of carrying out terror attacks or committing crimes in America, because most of the terrorists, if you look at the 9/11 Commission report, and I provided testimony to the commission, most of them entered the United States not by running the border, this fascination with the Mexican border. They entered through international airports and then violated the terms of their admission. That's not my assessment. That's the assessment of the 9/11 Commission. Read the report I wrote for the Social Contract. It's 27 pages long, and I provided you with the appropriate quotes so you understand this isn't what I'm saying. It's what the 9/11 Commission had to say. It's what leaders over at Homeland Security have said. This is fact-based stuff. So when they come into the country, if they give a fake name or an address that doesn't exist and they go missing, that's where the similarity between packages and arriving aliens end. And I'd love to know what Mr. Christie would do when aliens fail to depart. How would he then go after them? Because so far, to my knowledge, the only person really talking about the need to triple the number of immigration agents, not the number of H-1B visas, is Donald Trump. You see, when you understand that this is about creating a database, actionable information, if you don't have people to take action, actionable information means nothing. It's like, you know, skeet shooting. You see the clay pigeons sail through the air. If you don't have a gun, or if you have no bullets for the gun, no shotgun shells, how in the world are you going to hit the skeet if you don't have any ammunition to go with your firearm? It's all well and good to see where the skeet's going. It's all well and good to be able to draw a bead on it. But if you don't have the means to shoot at it, it's not going to make a difference. Knowing that people overstay doesn't matter unless you are in the position to dispatch agents to look for the person who overstays. I believe it was 1979 that our embassy was overrun at Tehran, Iran, under Jimmy Carter. Yeah, that Jimmy Carter, the one who was the mentor to the current president. As an immigration agent, I was one of many who were given the assignment of going out and looking for the Iranians who were in the United States because there were concerns that some of these people were involved with the Red Guard might want to do harm to us inside our own country. And we couldn't find most of them. We couldn't find our backside with a flashlight in both hands. Because when people are admitted into the United States very often, and I did that inspection job, there's no time to waste. There's no way of verifying addresses. So the guy gives you an address. Nobody is going to call up the hotel and say, hey, do you have Mohammed, whoever, registered at the hotel, Washington? No, we have no way of knowing. You say to the guy, where are you going to be staying? He says, I'm staying at the Hilton Hotel. Great. You write down Hilton Hotel, he walks out the door, boom, he's gone. He's gone. And if he doesn't show up at the Hilton, so be it. Where do we go now? Where do we begin to look for him? Even if we have the information, where to look for him, who are you going to send out? How many jail cells do we have? How many immigration judges do we have who can hear the case? Because when you arrest that alien who failed to depart, under due process, they are entitled to go before an immigration judge. And if you don't have enough judges, there's a problem. And we only have a few hundred immigration judges and millions of illegal aliens. If you brought in all the illegal aliens, you'd have to cut them loose. So understand how the system is rigged to fail. No thought is given to how do we deal with people who violate the law. So you have these half measures. We're going to track them. Now, the tracking of aliens was identified as a national security matter. It started in 1996 with the Immigration Act that was reformed. I provided some help to the subcommittee along with several of my colleagues when they crafted this amendment to the Immigration Act in 1996. And one of the first things that they said needed to be done was the creation of a program known as U.S. Visit, which would be a biometric system for tracking the arrival and departure of non-immigrant aliens so that people could not embed themselves easily in our country. Nothing was done about it. Along comes the 9/11 Commission, after 9/11, of course. And in 2004, a company known as Accenture, which at the time was headquartered in Hamilton, Bermuda, was given a contract by the United States government to implement U.S. Visit. Now, Mr. Christie said, and I know that the conservatives love to criticize the government is lousy, the government stinks, the government can't do anything right, the government, all of the ills go back to the government. That's as absurd as it gets. Just as it's equally absurd to think that the government can solve all the problems, government is not at the root of all the failures. It's the leaders, not the civil servants, folks. You know, when some politician says, let's fire the civil servants, everybody cheers. When our military goes out to do what it needs to do, they work for the government. We have the best military in the world. We would be speaking a different language and would not be the United States today if it wasn't for our military. So let's get off the backs of civil servants dedicated to doing their job and recognize that, as the saying in Yiddish goes, that when the fish goes bad, it smells from the head. The agents who work for ICE, the agents who work for the Border Patrol, the Customs and Border Protection inspectors want to do an effective job. They understand that our national security and the safety of their families is on the line. They are as dedicated and motivated as are the members of the military. This bashing of civil servants really has to stop. Because, you see, they want to do the job right. And, in fact, the federal unions, which have no role to play in campaign contributions or determining wages, that's done by the politicians, are the whistleblowers. And they've been out there beating the drum for many years, talking about the deficiencies of the immigration system, because it worries them greatly. You have the administration doing what they're doing. You have Chris Christie saying, we're going to bring in a private company. We're going to bring in FedEx. Meanwhile, since 2004, well, from 2004 to 2013, Accenture had the contract. In 2013, things switched. I'm not certain if FedEx, Accenture is still involved or not. But guess how much money the contract that they were given. It was initially a 5-year contract. I hope you have your seatbelt firmly fastened. because Accenture, the company that could not make it happen, or maybe would not make it happen, was given a $10 billion, with a B, $10 billion contract over a five-year period. The private sector does great work. Really? Like Enron, like Tyco, like General Motors when they went bankrupt, like AIG? It may be fashionable to beat up on civil servants, but look to the leaders of government, look to the leaders of the corporation. They're in bed with each other. It's an unholy alliance. It's an unholy alliance. In fact, if you go to the State Department website, they even hawk corporations now. I kid you not. The Discover America Partnership. Go to the State Department website about the Visa Waiver Program, and there is a link to corporate entities. I have never seen that before. This is an incestuous relationship, the likes of which we have never seen, and it's got to stop. This is how bad it is. So when Governor Christie says, let's get FedEx involved, my concern is what we saw happen with Accenture. And again, what would he do with those people who overstay the visa? He said, oh, we're going to go out there and tap them on the shoulder and say, excuse me, you were supposed to leave. And when the guy runs, how far does Mr. Christie want to chase them? And who is he going to get to chase them? Who's he going to get to tap them on the shoulder in the first place? See, this is about boots on the ground, folks. We have about seven ICE agents. Now, even here is an interesting story all by itself. If you go to the Department of Homeland Security, or I call it Department of Homeland Surrender website, you will see how many people work for Customs and Border Protection, the inspectors and the Border Patrol agents. There's over 20,000 inspectors at ports of entry, which, by the way, since we have so many people earning so much money and so much money invested in either building or renting facilities and running computer databases and all this business with the inspections process, any politician who says even when people run the border they should be entitled to stay here, then why are we bothering with this program to inspect passengers and cargo entering the United States? If it doesn't matter how they come here, then why are we bothering? Why not simply allow airliners from around the world to pull into a gate next to the domestic flights so that the flight that's coming into your town from New York or Chicago or Los Angeles or Miami or wherever could, you know, be at one gate and right next to it a flight from Jamaica, a flight from Tokyo, a flight from Zimbabwe, a flight from Argentina, a flight from Colombia, a flight from Pakistan, right? Why bother with the inspections process if it doesn't matter how they come here? Why are we spending billions of dollars on that program if you can just run the border and all's right with the world? This is lunacy. We have people working for State Department overseas issuing visas. We have inspectors at ports of entry. And then you've got so many politicians saying, but if you ignore that whole process, don't worry, we'll let you in anyway. Doesn't matter. Really? So we can fire all those consular officials and close those facilities that issue visas? Is that cool? Is that what we should be doing today? You see, if you stop and analyze what these politicians from both parties are saying, it's insanity. It's like going into a lunatic asylum and getting advice from one of the inmates. That's what Congress has become. Between the insanity driven by their corruption and the foolishness and the naivete, goodness gracious. One of the few people there who really gets it is the guy that Trump happened to go to, a man for whom I have tremendous amounts of respect. His name is Senator Jeff Sessions. He's an amazing leader. I had the privilege of being with Senator Sessions along with Congressman Louie Gohmert, Congressman John Fleming, when I spoke at an event sponsored by the David Horowitz Freedom Center. They also, by the way, are the organization that runs Front Page Magazine. I'm very proud to be one of their columnists. So you have to go, and you can go to the front page website, go to my website, michaelcutler.net. I cross-reference these articles in my articles for capsweb.org, Progressives for Immigration Reform. Listen to what Louie Gohmert, and listen especially to what Senator Jeff Sessions had to say. Politicians, it doesn't matter. They run the border. They're entitled to be. So let's, for once and for all, end the inspections process. Let's declare America the first borderless country, and let's see how long it lasts. Because it would only speed up the process that has already begun because of our corrupt government officials. You either secure the border and have a legal immigration system, or you don't. You can't say, run the border and it's okay, but we expect you to come in through the ports of entry. That's insanity. That's insanity. It's like saying that you're going to go to the Jersey Turnpike, and let's say you're driving down to Washington. So when you go to the Turnpike today, you have two choices. You can use an easy pass and not have to pay a toll. You know, you billed for the toll at the end of the month, or you pay in the cash lane where they give you a ticket, and depending on how far you drive on the turnpike, they tell you what you have to pay them. Now imagine if they opened up a third lane that said free, no speed limit. How many people do you think would be going through the toll booths? Anybody have any ideas? I think anybody who would then go through the toll booth is demonstrating mental illness. Mental illness. Why in the world would you pay a toll when the government gives you the option of going for free? This is insane. And this is what the people that talk about a legalization program for millions of illegal aliens are advocating. They are making a mockery of our first line of defense. Do you realize the level of duplicity? You see, that's why Donald Trump's message is resonating. Some people may not have thought of it in those terms, but we all know when something is wrong. We all have that inherent sense that there's something terribly wrong. And so we're being told on the one hand that we're going to inspect everybody, but on the other hand, if you evade the process, it doesn't make any difference whatsoever. Folks, lunacy. This is an act of national suicide. And then I was watching... Geraldo Rivera gives me fits. And I remember years ago, I was in the studio audience who did a program, The Sons of Scarface. It was mostly about Asian organized crime, people coming to this country and committing terrible criminal acts, and he was incensed about it. But he buys into so much of the mythology that's out there today, it blows my mind. And he was actually critical of the surveys that said that many Latinos happened to have a favorable impression of Donald Trump. He said, I don't believe it. It's probably a faulty survey. I don't like the surveys and polls. It's got to end because we have politicians chasing these mythical polls around. But you see, this notion about the Latino voter is the worst form of discrimination and profiling that I've seen in quite some time. Because what they're really saying is that if we know your last name, we don't need to know anything more about you. We know who you are and what you want. We know what your values are. That's crazy. That's crazy. Do you really think that everybody whose last name is Garcia, Rodriguez, or Ramirez is thrilled to death that our borders are wide open, that drugs are flowing into our country, that criminals in greater numbers are here now? Do you think this pleases someone because their last name is Garcia? This is stupid. It's insulting. It's there's no words for this. I'm sputtering. But this is the nonsense that you're going to hear on Sunday. Take the TV, turn it on, pick any station at random. I don't care which network, and see what you hear. Listen to them talk about the Latino vote. And I forgot who it was. It may have been Howie Kurtz on Fox News, who said that. I believe it was Kurtz who said that it's preposterous to think that, you know, all Latinos are the same, which is exactly my point. It's preposterous. This idea of chasing the Latino vote. And then we saw that display by Jeb Bush, campaigning in the Spanish language, and Donald called him on it. Then once again, I find myself having to agree with Donald Trump. See, it's not like I don't understand what it is to speak a foreign language. My mother used to speak Yiddish with my dad when they didn't want me to know what was going on. Because my father was born in the United States, but his parents came from Russia, Romania. His parents were fluent in Russian. They were fluent in Yiddish. So he grew up in a home where they spoke Yiddish. My mother spoke Polish as a girl and Yiddish. So when they wanted to keep me from knowing what was going on, they would converse in Yiddish. And there's no better incentive to learn a foreign language than to have your parents use it as a secret language. So after a while, I learned how to speak it. And there are certain words, frankly, that, you know, when you say the word, there's no substitute because it engenders this feeling of emotion. Lots of languages are like that. When I went to Border Patrol Academy, I will not claim to be a native speaker in terms of my proficiency in Spanish language, but passing the Spanish proficiency exam was as essential as passing the firearms or law training. It was a vital component to our training. They're not even giving that now to the agents, which is crazy. I've actually recommended at congressional hearings that we should be teaching more foreign languages to our agents so that we can rely less on translators and have the agents go out there and understand what's going on. But I certainly love the idea of being able to converse in foreign languages. You know, knowledge is power. I really would love everybody to speak 2, 3, 4 languages. It's great. But you see, a country isn't a country if its people don't interact with each other, if there isn't a sense of commonality. We don't need the same religion, certainly not. You know, I'm Jewish. Many of my best friends are Christian. I know they tell me that they're very comfortable with the idea that I'm Jewish, as we should. We're all cousins. The Jews laid the groundwork for the Christians and the Muslims who followed. So, you know, we all kind of came from the same place. But the point of the matter is that we can have different religions. We can have different cultures. But if we can't speak to one another, then we have a problem. And so I would actually go so far as to suggest that we declare English to be America's national language, not out of xenophobia, but out of practicality. And how could the reporters covering the election possibly deal with Jeb Bush speaking in Spanish if those reporters couldn't speak Spanish? How do they know exactly what he's telling the audience? You know, it's just not the way it's supposed to be done. And I wouldn't care if he was speaking Yiddish or Russian or Polish. This is America. This is America. And if we really are going to achieve that goal of E Pluribus Unum, out of many, one, then it begins with a common language. And what's so remarkable is that in my travels, I've given speeches and I've participated in panel discussions and debates on college campuses across the United States, whether it was Yale Law School, whether it was Columbia Graduate School of Journalism or Columbia School of Law or NYU, Chapman Law School out in California, Central Washington University outside Seattle. I've been to so many schools around the country, and it's been really wonderful. I remember I was in a graduate journalism class at Columbia University, and the professor was a woman who had come here as an infant as part of the Cuban boat lift. And we used to go back and forth, and boy, oh boy, we had our arguments. And over time, she started to tell me that more and more of what I was saying, as she had time to think about it, seemed more and more reasonable. I haven't been in her class in 3 or 4 years, but the last time I was there, she surprised me, because this young lady had said that she's given some very serious thought and realized that we should probably declare English to be America's national language for the reasons I just set forth. These aren't left-right issues, folks. These are right-wrong issues. That's what's being left out of the conversation. And so if you stop and really give thought, if you can't speak a common language, then you lose unity as a country and you become balkanized. You shatter the country into bits and pieces. That's not in anybody's interests. That's not how we do assimilation. That's not how we achieve equality. Because, you see, I was in Minnesota at a speaking event, and a woman approached me and she introduced me to her husband after I got done delivering a speech. Her husband had come here many years ago from Mexico, spoke fluent English. She spoke fluent English, but he still was very good, very proficient with Spanish. And she said, you know, Mr. Cutler, my husband had an observation that I want you to hear it because maybe it's helpful to you in your work. And it turned out that it was. because what he had said to me was very, very interesting. He said, you know, Mr. Cutler, what I tend to do is I listen to the news broadcasts in English, and then I like to sometimes listen in Spanish. And he said, do you know that the Spanish media very often twists news reports, especially where politics is concerned, so that sometimes you wouldn't even realize that they're reporting on the same story? He said, now, if I didn't speak English fluently, I would have no way of knowing. But he said, both versions of the story can't be the truth because they conflict. And I said, well, so then you're telling me that there are Spanish language newspapers and broadcasts that are being deceptive. He said, deceptive is a kind word. So again, we come back to this problem about manipulating the truth, manipulating the American people. That's not what this country was built on. That's not what it should be based on to this day. It's becoming increasingly difficult to get the truth from the journalists. Now, when you add foreign languages to the mix, all bets are off. And that's what this is about. It's about standing our ground. You know, and that professor at Columbia said to me, she said, you know, I've got to give you credit for coming here and debating me and arguing with me and not backing down. I said, I'm celebrating the First Amendment. You know, this right for peaceable assemblage was designed to have the kind of discourse that I had not only with her, but with people wherever I travel. We've become timid. We've become cowardly. We've become wusses. People say to us, oh, you're xenophobic. And people say, gee, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to offend you. And they walk away. Why? Why are you walking away? You've just been insulted. Why are you walking away? We need to stand our ground and get back into that person's face. I don't mean physically. This isn't about violence. I'm a very strong advocate against violence. I don't want to see violence. But what I want to see are Americans standing up. I want to see Americans standing up. When someone says Black Lives Matter, my answer is all lives matter. And there should be no distinction by race, religion, ethnicity. Every life should be viewed as equally precious, equally valuable. But if you don't stand up, folks, people are going to believe you're agreeing with them. Because in silence, people assume you're in agreement. And if you're not in agreement, then grow a spine or some other body parts and stand your ground. When you hear repugnant statements being made, stand your ground. If we can send our soldiers into armed conflict halfway around the world to defend America, then we as Americans should be defending our country through the First Amendment right here inside our own borders. We need to stand up and stand strong and be very clear about where we stand. And increasingly, it's not happening. Increasingly, we've become a nation of the acquiescent. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to offend you. Really? How could you yourself not be offended by somebody making terrible accusations about you? Don't worry about offending the other person. They've already offended you. And I'm a kid from Brooklyn. And in Brooklyn, when someone threw a punch at me, I was expected to return the favor. Now, I'm not talking about fights. But I am talking about verbally setting forth your position and being very clear about it. You see, you have to push back. It may not be fun. It might be difficult. Maybe you don't like conflict. But folks, sooner or later, conflict is going to visit you whether you want it or not. Better sooner than later. Better sooner than later. This idea that we can be intimidated is a terrible idea. My father taught me that I would teach people how they should treat me by demonstrating what I was willing to accept. And, you know, finally, Donald Trump stands up. You know, he's a New Yorker. And he conducts himself the way New Yorkers do. You call him out, he comes after you. And I love it. And we all should. And again, I'm not endorsing his candidacy at this stage of the game. But it's refreshing to watch some guy stand in front of the cameras and stop with the BS and say, listen, you're wrong, and I'm going to call you on it. I'm going to call you on it. That's what men and women do. That's what adults do, folks. We've become a nation of children, children who wait on lines for 3 days because there's a new toy called an iPhone coming out. Initially, we saw that with Microsoft. The new operating, oh, Windows 98, oh, I got to wait on lines for it. And people would come running out with the box and they're swinging it over their head like they just won a trophy at some competition. Look, I bought it. Are you crazy? And to this day, you see it, right? The new iPhone comes out, and they open the doors, and you would think it's the New York City Marathon, and everyone runs into the store, and some guy comes out, and he's waving this box over his head. I got my new phone. Really? Are you proud of yourself? What an achievement. You waited online and spent how much money so you have a new phone? Wow, I'm really impressed with you. That's a hell of an achievement. You should get a medal. Folks, this stuff is silly, but we're losing control of our country because we've been more concerned with who's winning Dancing with the Stars. We've been more concerned with who's going to win the World Series. If I hear one more story about Inflategate, I'm going to blow my cork. That's what we're going to inflate. I don't care, okay? It's a silly damn game. And if I offend people calling football a game, it's a game. Don't tell anybody. It's a game, okay? It's a game. And you look at all the airtime that has been wasted on Inflategate. There's a treaty in the works with our enemy, mortal enemy, Iran, but they're spending at least as much time on Inflategate. Are you serious? Are you kidding me? Is this where the priorities are? And I'll tell you what the other solution is, besides screaming at the politicians, call up the networks and tell those idiots you're not going to turn their channel on anymore. Because, you see, this all comes down to how many viewers watch these idiotic programs. And you tell them, your programming is irrelevant. You're spewing misinformation. I'm not going to watch you anymore. I'm going to recommend my friends stop watching you. Look at the newspapers. The New York Times used to be a decent newspaper. I used to read it all the time. I had a subscription. If they offered it to me for free, I'm not interested. You know, their motto, all the news that's fit to print should be changed to you'll have a fit from what we print. I mean, this nonsense, this blather that passes for news, the propaganda that's out there. And so I just got an email today. We'll give you a year's subscription for 50% off, 60%, whatever. Pretty soon they'll be paying me to take the subscription. They're desperate because if no one reads the newspaper, not only aren't they getting the money from the people buying the paper, but they depend on advertisers. Who wants to advertise in a newspaper when 8 people are reading it? What's the point? So we've got to become aggressive. Aggressive with the journalists, aggressive with our politicians, and making it clear to them that we're done with them. You see, that's why the people leading the polls now, whether it's Fiorina, whether it's Ben Carson, whether it's Donald Trump, is because they are not part of the political establishment. Because people have come to understand the damage that both parties have done to us. They're supposed to do for us. And what are they supposed to do? First and foremost, they're supposed to protect us and our families. You know, if you look at the big arguments, Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, the liberals think more government is good. The conservatives think less government is good. That's the big dividing line. But even the people who say less government certainly want a strong military. Certainly want law enforcement to do its job, and look at the way law enforcement is under attack. But this was predictable. I wrote an article for capsweb.org about being on the slope to anarchy back, I think, in 2013, because you had California telling the police officers that when they grabbed an illegal alien driving without a license, to not impound the person's car for 30 days, even though that was the law. Why not? Because the poor person has to go to work. Really? If you're here illegally, you're not supposed to be working. Why aren't we seizing the money of those people who work illegally? It's ill-gotten. You know, if a drug dealer sells drugs and makes $1 million through the program known as asset forfeiture, we swoop down and take away the guy's car, his house, his jewelry, his bank book. Ill-gotten proceeds, boom, it's gone. Money launderers, your money is gone. Tax evaders, your money is gone. Okay. Why aren't we doing the same thing when somebody works illegally in the United States? Why aren't we doing that? And saying, okay, you worked illegally, we're taking your money. It was ill-gotten. Is it less ill-gotten than the drug dealer? Yes, it's a small amount of money, and we've always been compassionate. And when I was an agent, we were instructed to always get the money for the person, which actually made sense because the idea was you didn't want to do what people like ranches used to do in Texas and elsewhere, was they would work illegal aliens to death in the fields. And then the day before they were supposed to pay them, they'd call the Border Patrol. And when the Border Patrol came down and the mass confusion that resulted, they got away without paying people for working sometimes an entire summer, busting their backs. And so what a game that was. You take poverty-stricken, desperate people, exploit the hell out of them, treat them worse than livestock, and then you call the Border Patrol, because back then it wasn't a crime for knowingly hiring illegal aliens, and swindle them out of the meager amount of money you had originally agreed to pay them in the first place. This is the mindset of the Zuckerbergs and the Greenspans and all these other thugs. How do we screw American families out of the money they desperately need to raise their children? Let's screw the Americans over. This is an anti-American activity. I don't know any stronger language I can use. This is against American workers and American families over a level of greed that is unprecedented. But the time has probably come, since there are sanctions, to seize the money that people earn by working illegally and going after the employers and hammer them. But then we also have to go after the people who would get lawful status by lying on their applications. That's the part of the process nobody talks about, going after the fraud. But there's got to be negative consequences to violating the law, not words of encouragement. Jeb Bush saying illegally entering the United States is an act of love is an act of lunacy on his part. If it's an act of love to run our borders, why are we spending money on an inspections process? I would love to debate Mr. Bush. My gosh, what I wouldn't give for a 30-minute back and forth with old Jeb. Act of love, Jeb. Looking for love in all the wrong places. You know, it's remarkable. It's remarkable. And talking about American values. Why do American values never apply to American families? Why does compassion never apply to American kids living in poverty? You look at the riots in Baltimore and elsewhere. Part of the fuel behind those riots is poverty. Not entirely, and I'm not giving anybody an excuse for rioting. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But when you have kids who are idle, you know, the thing about idle hands, and you have agitators come in from outside, as we saw in Ferguson. The Michael Brown shooting turned out to not be improper, given the totality of circumstances, that this thug went after a police officer, and the police officer had every justification to defend himself. You know, the thing that's really upset me about this latest killing, the police officer was just buried in Illinois today. I think it was the Illinois cop who was shot. There's been a few shootings. But, you know, one of the nagging thoughts in the back of my head, did that police officer have an opportunity to take a shot and maybe hesitated, fearful for what might follow? Hesitation kills you in this business. You can be you know, when I used to go to the range and I had to qualify every 90 days as a federal agent, we had to, you know, shoot against the clock. And the range officer would always say, I don't care about the accuracy as much as about the time. I mean, you got to hit the target. But he said, you know, whether you hit a dead center or you're off by 2 or 3 inches, who cares? But you got to get the shot off quickly. Because you can shoot perfect shots each time, but if the other guy shoots you first, it's not going to matter. Microseconds count in a shootout. Microseconds. If the bad guy gets that opportunity to squeeze the trigger, it doesn't matter how good your accuracy is. How many police officers may be losing their lives because they've been intimidated? They're fearful to respond to force being exerted against them. This is not victimless stuff. This is not victimless stuff. But going back to the point I was making, a lot of those people that were out there on the street are unemployed. And instead of looking at ways to get American kids working and incentivize achievement, what are we doing? You have kids going to school, running up student loans, spending maybe, you know, $50,000, $100,000 a year on their education. It looks like a mortgage payment. And then even though they graduated with honors, they graduated at the top of the class, when they try to get that STEM job, they're turned away because the company is determined to hire people from India. Could there be any more anti-American an act than turning away American kids who desperately want to escape poverty, who want to enter the mainstream economic life of America, become contributing members of our society? And you have the Zuckerbergs of the world flipping them the bird and saying, oh, you're American, go to hell. We'd rather have someone from a third world so we can exploit them. It's got to stop. It's got to stop. And when you have politicians telling you that this is acceptable, they need to be sent packing. Politicians who declare that America is the country of exceptionalism, American exceptional, what does it mean? I would suggest that if you're talking about American exceptionalism, you're talking about the exceptionalism of Americans. So when you tell me that we need to bring in the world's best and brightest, my answer is, if you believe in American exceptionalism, then the world's best and brightest are already here, and they are Americans. And they are black, and they are white, and they're Latino, and they're Asian, and they're of every religion, every ethnicity. That's what America is supposed to be about. Go to school, work hard, mix a little luck into that stew, and you can write the next success story. But increasingly, Americans are being shunned by American companies. It's anti-American, folks. It's got to stop. I'm working on an article for Front Page Magazine, and you're going to be shocked when you go to Front Page next week and see the piece that I wrote about how many more foreign students are being admitted into the United States. And guess what they're studying? STEM curriculum, science, technology, engineering, and math. You don't bring sand to the beach. You don't invite more people to your house when you run out of food. And there's no reason why we ought to be educating foreign engineering students, foreign computer programmers in the United States, while there are American kids who would desperately want to sit in those classrooms. And I know some people in some of the news media said, oh, American kids should have to pay for their education. Let me tell you what. I had a free education at Brooklyn College here in New York. I had a free education. If it wasn't for that fact, I would not have gotten a degree. I lost my parents when I was in my first year of college. They both had cancer. I could not have afforded to pay for an education. And if a society wants to build itself up, then you do it by educating the kids, by incentivizing achievement, not frustrating and thwarting their every effort to escape the clutches of poverty and violence. Since I last did this program a couple of weeks ago, I was astonished. And I was just in North Carolina. That's one of the places that I went. And I met with the sheriffs. They could not have treated me more royally. It's always wonderful to meet with law enforcement around the country. They had me do some shooting at their shoot, don't shoot simulator. It's an amazing program. You really walk out of there feeling as though you'd been in a bunch of armed conflicts. Very, very enlightening. And they were talking about the heroin epidemic that they're experiencing. Huge problem all over the country. And yet if you go to these newspaper accounts, whether it's Jeb Bush, whether it's Hillary Clinton, well, I mean, you know, maybe Hillary didn't get the, you know, the whole thing, did you get the memo? Maybe we should be asking, did you get the email? But they both said, gee, we didn't realize that drug addiction was a big problem. Really? Governor Cuomo, a couple of months ago, or about a month ago, announced that he was allocating $272,000 for the state of New York to provide the antidote to heroin overdoses. You're not going to believe where this is. Public schools to the nurses. They're going to be trained in the use of Narcan, which is the antidote. And I thought, my gosh, public school. And then 2 weeks ago, and a couple of the sheriffs told me they had seen the commercial. It startled me. I was watching TV, and a commercial came on that I don't remember the name of this pharmaceutical. But believe it or not, they've come up with a pharmaceutical that counteracts the effect of opiates, heroin basically, and oxycodone, because it slows down the digestive system so people become constipated. I know it's not a pleasant topic, but, you know, we're adults. So people are becoming constipated because of opioid use. They were actually peddling a pharmaceutical product that would help you alleviate the problem if it was caused by the ingestion of opioids. In other words, heroin or oxycodone. And then you've got doctors being told that it's now appropriate to prescribe oxycodone for patients as young as 11 years of age. What more could we possibly do to turn our entire country into a country of drug addicts? And if you want to look at the root cause of most violent crime, folks, it's drugs and gangs. This idea, well, if we limit how many bullets you put in your gun, that's going to make things safer. No, it doesn't work that way, folks. It doesn't work that way. Bank robbers, drug dealers, crazy people, and terrorists are not counting how many bullets they're putting in their illegal firearm. If you want to go after the biggest problems we have, go after the drugs, go after the gangs, you see? But that would mean secure the border. And God knows that's the last thing we want to do. Marco Rubio said that he understood that there was an addiction problem because people are using opiates and heroin is cheaper. Okay, Marco, and why is heroin cheaper? See, he left out the next sentence. And the next sentence is that even though demand is at a record level, and usually if you look at classic economics, when demand for something goes up, the price goes up because it becomes more valuable. Where heroin is concerned, the demand has never been higher. And yet the price is so cheap that according to a recent newspaper article, and I've written about it, you can get a bag of heroin for less than the cost of a pack of cigarettes. How in the world could heroin be that cheap when the demand is so high? Because the supply is even greater. That's the only way this equation works. This is like algebra. And the only way that this equation works is if the supply of heroin still outstrips this demand, and the demand is now at record levels. What does that tell you about border security? What does that tell you about border security, folks? And the other thing that you need to understand, drug trafficking organizations do not do business by sending drugs in a package somewhere. They set up shop in communities across the country. And they send their people from the home country, not just Latin America, whether it's the Russian mob, whether it's the Jamaican drug posses, it doesn't matter, whether it's the Asians, doesn't matter. They send their people here. Do you know why? To retain control over their profits. Because they worry about people stealing the drugs and stealing the money. So by sending their people here, guess what their people leave behind in their home country? Their family members. And the drug trafficking organizations make it very clear to their quote-unquote employees, you screw me on that drug deal, you're not going to see your sister ever again. You're not going to see your brother. You're not going to see your daughter. You're not going to see your wife or your father or your mother, you see, because they then kill the family. So if we have record amounts of drugs flowing into the United States, I assure you, we have record numbers of gang members and drug traffickers entering the United States to run the business here inside our country. That's the metric, folks, for border security. There is none. Our borders are a speed bump. Very simple. Very simple. So the administration can say whatever they want to say about how secure the border is wide open. And Trump comes along and says, just one minute, we're going to secure the border. Everyone's freaking out. Oh, my God, he's going to ruin it for us. What's wrong with this guy? Because I believe that if you took the drug money out of the banking industry, if you took the drug money, if you took the drug money out of real estate, if you took the drug money out of high-end auto sales, and if you took the drug money out of high-end jewelry, those industries would suffer terribly. It's fueled by the drug trade, those industries. And you got to wonder how much of that drug money is making its way into political campaign coffers. You should watch a TV movie that's on. It's on cable regularly called The Cocaine Cowboys. Look at what happened in Florida because of the drug trade. Miami Vice, think about it. This isn't rocket science. No wonder Trump has everybody shaking in their boots, because he's saying exactly what they do not want to talk about. And we need to continue the conversation. That's what this program is about, folks. Continuing the conversation. Getting people to understand the level of betrayal for which our government bears responsibility in a very perilous era. The threat of ISIS, Al-Qaeda, the threat of the transnational gangs, the economic meltdown, the destruction of the middle class. In so many ways, America is going the wrong way on a one-way street. And finally, the discussion is coming back to the issues that we should have had 30 darn years ago. Maybe more. But then again, better late than never, isn't it? I want you to remember that America's borders, America's immigration laws are our first and last line of defense. You cannot defend a country with open borders and millions of illegal aliens floating around your country. And when politicians tell you that the quote-unquote solution is to give these people lawful status, realize that there will be no capacity to do a face-to-face interview. Realize there will be no capacity to do a field investigation. Realize that you're not only violating common sense, but the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. And that's what I wrote about for the social contract. I urge you, I beg you, please take the time, read the stuff I've been writing. Ever since the ashes from 9/11 landed on my home, I have truly been a man on a mission. And my mission, and I have accepted it, is to educate as many of our fellow Americans as possible, so that we can then go to our elected representatives and make damn sure they actually represent us. Because right now they are not. They are not. And if you think it makes sense to bring in more foreign students and more foreign high-tech workers, even as Americans are losing their jobs and their homes, get psychiatric treatment. Get psychiatric treatment. Everything that's happening is no big mystery. And when you hear these people on TV say, well, the economy would take off if they pass comprehensive reform, let me tell you what will happen under comprehensive immigration reform or any such legislation. And, of course, they say, well, it's not an amnesty because these people have to pay a fine. It doesn't matter. They came hoping to work. They are getting what they want. It's a damn amnesty. Let's stop the nonsense. But the remittances will increase. And this country will bankrupt itself, because this does not help the American economy, bringing in foreign workers. It destroys the American economy. The United States is losing probably upwards of $200 billion a year in remittances, and if you include the multiplier effect, just those remittances alone more than account for the annual increase in America's national debt. If we enact comprehensive reform, the money will flow even faster out of our country. How does that help America? How does that help Americans? It just enables the wealthy bums to help themselves to America's money, just the way the banks robbed the banks 6-8 years ago, whenever it was, the bottom fell out. These are calculated moves designed to fill the coffers of that top 1% or fraction of 1%. They are in a feeding frenzy, and we are on the menu. Our futures are on the menu. America is on the menu. We're being gobbled up by these bums, and it's got to stop. It's got to stop. And we can do this. We can do this. That's the purpose to this program, folks. That's why I'm very happy at the end of every week to sit down with you. I missed doing this the last 2 weeks because of travels, and I had a computer problem a week after that. But that's why, for I don't know how many years now, I've been sitting here at my desk on Friday evenings trying to provide you with the information you're not going to get in the mainstream media. It's not out there. Don't look for it. It's a waste of time right now. If you like this program, please tell as many of your friends about it as possible. This is a nonprofit deal. I pay to run this thing, and you notice there's no commercials. I am doing this as an act of love for my country and an act of love for my children, because I fear for their future just as I fear for America's future. We've got to take back this country from the thieves who are stealing us and robbing us blind. This isn't about left or right. And please, when you discuss the immigration issue with your friends and neighbors, this has nothing to do with any other issue. This has nothing to do with gay rights. It has nothing to do with gay marriage. It has nothing to do with anything except immigration. You see, any thinking American, irrespective of political orientation, should be on the same page with us. The fact that enough Americans have been hoodwinked over the years blows my mind. This is every bit as much a liberal issue as it is a conservative issue. Bernie Sanders was actually making that point, that this isn't about being conservative. This is about, you know, he sees it actually as a liberal issue. I see it as both. I see it as an American issue. He's one of very few. I mean, I have issues with the idea of socialism, not my cup of tea, even though I'm a Democrat. But Bernie Sanders is right. This is not a conservative issue. For too long, people have been drinking the Kool-Aid and accepting as fact some of the craziest things that are being said by so many politicians and pundits on TV. Well, if he's on TV, he must be smart. And you know what's so funny? There was a time when I was doing an average of 15 television programs per month shortly after 9/11. That's not happening now, because the news media is in bed with the whole deal. Most television networks now have bilingual subsidiaries. The more people who watch the program, the more they charge for the advertising time. That's what this has come down to. This is what it has come down to. So we really have got to wake up to the reality. We have to wake up our neighbors to the reality. And then, as I always like to say, democracy is not a spectator sport. What you then need to do is to go to your elected representative and make it clear to them that we are not as stupid as they were hoping we are. You know, you look at the issue of the drones on the border. I was on with Neil Cavuto a few years ago talking about the drones. And he said, well, the drones are a good thing. I said, no, they're a lousy thing. They cost a lot of money. I didn't know how much. I found out when I spoke to some folks over at DHS afterwards. But I said, drones can't make arrests. Drones can't back up a Border Patrol agent who's getting attacked. All a drone does is send back pictures to some command center, and then they first have to try to find the agent, and by the time they get them, the poor guy could be dead or seriously wounded, or gal. There are plenty of excellent women in the patrol as well. This isn't, I'm not being sexist here. I use guy as a generic. But we're putting American lives in jeopardy to enforce the laws, and we're not giving them the tools they need to be safe and effective so that the illusion can be created. And so the GAO did a study at the behest of an outgoing senator, Coburn. And what they found was, guess how many arrests have been attributed to the drones that we've spent a ton of money on? Zero. Zero. And they're about to buy more drones. And I was told that for the price of one drone, we could put up four helicopters with armed Border Patrol agents on board. If you are in the Border Patrol and you are confronted by a bunch of alien smugglers, perhaps they're armed, what would give you better comfort? A drone with cameras that can take high-def photographs of you getting shot? or a chopper with armed agents on board who can land and back you up? I mean, it's not a serious question. I think we all know the answer. But I really believe that the reason we buy the drones, first of all, you've got to look at campaign contributions by the companies that make the drones. That certainly raises interests. But it's about squandering the money to create the illusion that all is right with the world while making damn sure that nothing changes because too much money is changing hands. We are getting the best government money can buy. That's part of the problem, folks. It really is. We can change that equation, though, by getting involved. This election puts America at crossroads. Sink or swim. Sink or swim. I don't care what party the candidates are from. I don't care if they're with the Hopping Kangaroo Party. What I do care about is whether they're pro-America and pro-American or not. And the only way to make that determination isn't looking to see if there's an R or a D after their name, but where they are on these positions, to ask the tough questions and pay attention to those answers, and to become involved in those town hall meetings. And when some politician starts to tell you, oh, we're going to bring in the best and brightest from around the world, instead of applauding and being like a trained seal, stand up and just say two words to that bum of a politician, whoever it is. Tell them, citizens first. Citizens first. Because, you see, American citizens need to get those jobs, not some people from some third world country who are going to send the money back to that country and further destroy the U.S. economy. This is unsustainable, and we need to get our voices heard. We really do. Anyway, I want to thank you, as always, for joining me at the end of the week. I wish all of you a wonderful Labor Day weekend. We'll be doing some radio tomorrow, The Advocates with Neil Young over in New Hampshire. I'll be doing some other programs during the week, heading out to Pennsylvania, getting ready for a trip to D.C. It's about getting the word out there, folks. It's about getting the word out there. And if you become aware of any speaking opportunities, please let me know. You can reach me through michaelcutler.net. You can contact me through capsweb.org or Front Page Magazine. They will refer the information, but you can reach me through my website, michaelcutler.net, probably the most direct way. It's about having those conversations. It's about celebrating our First Amendment. It's about protecting our nation and the future of our nation, and as a consequence, protecting the lives and futures of our children and their children. You can't be a good parent without being involved in politics today. As good parents, we feed our kids, we give them the best education, safe, wholesome environment at home. But once they get out into the real world, it's what America is doing to meet its obligations to its own citizens that will make the whole difference. So please, folks, get involved. I remind you, democracy is not a spectator sport. See you next week. Good night, everybody.